So as Dustin mentioned today, we're going to be starting a new series on the parables. And while I have taught through the parables before, as we've gone through John, we've gone through large chunks of Matthew, we've gone through the Gospel of Mark, and so I've covered some of the parables as I've done that over the years, but I've never actually done a series just on the parables of Jesus. And so this is sort of new to me as well. And I will admit it's somewhat challenging. Dustin and I have gotten together on multiple occasions now. In fact, the last time we got together was, I believe, for 4.5 hours to kind of just talk through some of what we're going to be doing here. So for about, I think it's going to take us probably about 15 weeks maybe, 15 or 16 weeks. We're not going to cover all of the parables of Jesus, but we're going to hit some that, we're going to try to hit different groups of parables. So we'll hit kind of, you know, most of the major themes with the parables. But to kick us off today, I'm going to do something I normally wouldn't do. I'm going to actually read a quote from somebody who I wouldn't necessarily theologically align with, meaning much of this particular individual, her theology would be very different than what ours is, but she made a very profound statement in a book that she wrote on the parables of Jesus almost 50 years ago. Her name is Madeline Boucher, and again, I wouldn't align with her theologically on many things. She would be somebody who would look at the Gospels and say, they're not all that historical. We can't truly trust what's written there. But she will admit that Jesus was a real person and that he actually spoke in parables. So here's what she wrote, and again, I think this is rather profound. She wrote this in her book. When Jesus preached so strikingly in parables, he did not create a new literary genre. Rather, he made brilliant use of a genre which was already a long tradition and which was familiar throughout all of the Mediterranean world. In Greece and in Rome, parables were employed by rhetoricians, politicians, philosophers. Perhaps the most illustrious among them who made use of them was Socrates and Aristotle. Much of their writings were filled with parables. In Israel, parables were uttered by prophets and wise women and men. They appeared even in the oldest books of the Old Testament. That's right, there are actually parables in the Old Testament. Parables were often used by Jewish rabbis who were contemporaries of Jesus. The parables which most closely resemble Jesus' are those that we would find in the Old Testament and in the rabbinic literature, meaning teachers of his time. These Semitic parables, as distinct from the classical parables, are no doubt the predecessors of those we find preserved in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then some would argue even John. Anyone who compares the parables in the Gospels with those in other sources, historical sources, is led to conclude that Jesus was a master of the genre. Perhaps its most brilliant author ever. Even today, parables, and in particular those of Jesus, remain among the most beautiful and memorable works in the historical literature. Even if you ask secular people who don't really trust what's written in the scriptures about Jesus' use of parables, they will admit that he was probably one of the greatest teachers of all time in his use of parables. He was a master at telling these parables. And again, that's something that not just Christians believe, but those who just look at the Bible as a piece of literature or Jesus just as a human being, they will admit that his use of parables exceeded that of so many of his contemporaries. He was a master at using them. There's an author named Klein Snodgrass who wrote probably the most exhaustive commentary. It's about that thick. I've got it on my desk at home. He wrote one of the most exhaustive commentaries on Jesus' parables, and he referred to it as referred to Jesus' use as works of art and weapons in his conflict with his opponents. They would bring delight to some, but offense to others. They would explain the kingdom, they would show the character of God, and they would reveal the expectations that God has for humans. So Jesus was obviously a master at using parables. It's something that even those outside the church have recognized for over 2,000 years. In fact, so many unsaved people today that have never opened the book of the Bible, if you were to ask them about certain parables, they would recognize them. They might not know them fully, but they would, there'd be something familiar to them, something that would stand out to them. So what are we going to do today to kind of kick this off? As Dustin mentioned, we sometimes in our beginning of series, we'll do these introductions. And so they can get to be a bit academic. There's not often a lot of takeaways or practical application from them. And today is going to be much like that. Today might be a little bit like a high school literature or a college literature class, but hopefully not too much. We're going to do a number of things. One of them is we're going to try to define what a parable is. And that's not an easy thing to do, believe it or not. Not everybody agrees on what a parable is. So we're going to try to define what a parable is. We're going to look at why Jesus taught in parables, and we're going to let Jesus tell us himself why he taught in parables. And then lastly, we're going to just briefly look at some of the interpretive challenges. What challenges do we face when we look at a parable? And then some problematic approaches to parables. And so hopefully that'll lay us some groundwork so that next week we're going to get into two of the earliest parables of Jesus. And this is going to help us to understand why Jesus did what he did. So let's first look at what a parable is. It'd be great to be able to start with a definition of a parable, but the problem is there's no agreement among scholars as to exactly how to define what a parable. If you went ahead and you Googled this, if you Googled how many parables of Jesus are there, you're going to come up with numbers anywhere from 30 to 40 to 50 or even 65 or 70. Because not everybody agrees on what a parable is when it comes to the Scripture. And part of the reason for that is because the Scripture doesn't always say, this is a parable, and identify it for us as a parable. It does that sometimes. One of the things that Klein Snodgrass said in his commentary is that it's difficult to come up with a single definition because it'll either be too narrow so that it'll exclude a lot of the parables in the Scriptures, or it's going to be so wide that it's going to be meaningless. In other words, some would say that the only thing that qualifies for a parable in the gospel is something that has three elements. It's got to have characters, okay? It's got to be a story, and it's got to have a plot. And if it doesn't have those three things, it's not a parable. Well, the problem with that is there are parables in the New Testament that the authors themselves, Matthew, Luke, and Mark, call parables that don't have those three characteristics. So who are we going to trust? Some guy that says, oh, it's got to be a story with plot and characters, or what the Bible says sometimes regarding parables. So some will have this very narrow definition of what a parable is, but then there are others that will make it so broad that almost any illustration or almost any figure of speech, they're all parables in the Bible. And so those folks will come up with a list of 65 or 70 of them. I tend to be more on that side, though not as extreme as that. I don't believe every figure of speech is a parable. But I definitely recognize that in the Gospels, there's more than just stories that qualify as parables. And we're going to see some next week, actually. You're going to see that they don't have characters or plots in the ones that we look at next week, but they are certainly parables, and they are identified as such. Part of the reason that I hold the view of parables that I do, and I'll give you my definition here in a little bit, is because the Hebrew and the Greek words themselves that are used for parables would provide for us kind of a broader idea of what a parable includes. In fact, the Hebrew word, mashal, has two primary meanings, one of which is to compare or to be similar. Some would pronounce it mashal or marshal. It can also mean to rule, but that's a different category of the word. But it's used 40 times in the New Testament to refer to things like proverbs, riddles, poems, discourse, prophetic utterances, short stories, and what are called similitudes, meaning making two things similar. A simile, you might remember that from high school English. And so the Old Testament word includes a broader range, including everything, again, from poems to riddles, etc. The New Testament equivalent to that word is where we get our word parable. It's actually parabole. That's what the Greek word is. And it means to place something alongside or to compare two things, and it's used over 50 times in the New Testament. And it shares some of those very same meanings and usages that the Hebrew word does, meaning sometimes riddles, sometimes stories, sometimes simple comparisons. In fact, I've got some examples for you here. I'm just going to read these to you. In Luke chapter 4, verse 23, it says, "And he said to them, no doubt," this is Jesus, "no doubt you will quote this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal thyself.'" Well, that's the word for parable. It's translated proverb in our New Testament. Why? Because it is a proverb. But it qualifies as a parable. Mark chapter 3, verse 23, Jesus actually says this. And he called them to himself and he began speaking to them in parables. How shall Satan cast out Satan? That's a riddle. So you could translate this. He began speaking to them in riddles. So even in Jesus' use, he referred to riddles sometimes as parables. Matthew chapter 13, he spoke to them in parables, and he said, "The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 pecks of flour until it was leavened." Well, that's a comparison, a similitude. He basically says the kingdom of heaven is like, but it's also identified as a parable. Lastly, or two more, the simple story in the New Testament. Look at Luke chapter 13 with me. Luke chapter 13, jump down to verse 6. We see this, and he began telling them this parable. A man had a fig tree which had been planted in the vineyard, or his vineyard, and he came looking for fruit on it and did not find any. And he said to the vineyard keeper, "Behold, for 3 years I have come looking for fruit on a fig tree and without finding any. Cut it down. Why does it even use up the ground?" And he answered and he said to him, "Let it alone, sir, for this year too, until I dig around it and put in fertilizer. And if it bears fruit next year, fine. But if it not, then cut it down." What do we have there? We've got a very simple, short story. It has a character, has a plot, right? Well, it's identified here as a parable, that Greek word. I won't have you turn here, but Matthew chapter 13, we see an example of a complex parable. So we have a simple story, then we have a very complex one, which is the parable of the sower. Remember, it's got 4 different scenes, if you will, and it's very complex. In fact, so complex it needed to be explained by Jesus. And so we find that if we just look at the Hebrew and the Greek words that are used for parable, it gives this idea that parables can include things like figures of speech, stories that are very simple, stories that are very complex, just simple statements of comparison. It can include riddles. It can include questions. And so the range is a little broader than what some want to make it. So if we just kind of get that in our head, that parables are not just stories that Jesus used, they were figures of speech. So I'm going to give you what I believe is a good definition. And again, people will argue about this, but I'm going to do my best based on what we just covered. A parable is a figure of speech or a story specifically designed to illuminate a spiritual truth through the use of comparison. Let me say that again. A parable is a figure of speech or a story specifically designed to illuminate or to illustrate a spiritual truth through the use of comparison. So there's 3 things that make up a parable. It's got to be a story, a character, and a plot, but rather, it's got to be a figure of speech or a story of some kind. It's got to be designed to illuminate or illustrate a spiritual truth. And then lastly, it will always use comparison. It's going to use this to compare it with that. That really is at the heart and soul of what a parable is. And Jesus does that throughout the Scriptures masterfully. Now, people get into discussions on the types of parables. And we do see different groupings or types of parables. But again, not everybody agrees on how many types of parables or how many groups of parables are they. One of the ways that people will try to group parables or to type them is by topic. What I mean by that is looking at the parable and saying, what's the topic of this parable? Now, even with this, not everybody can agree on topics. I've got 3 of what are probably considered to be the best 3 commentaries from an evangelical perspective on the parables. One of them is by William Boyce, and he basically says, oh, there's 5 categories. Parables about the kingdom, salvation, wisdom, Christian life, and judgment. So that's how he lays out his commentary. There's 5 categories. You can group every parable into one of these 5 groups. Well, John MacArthur doesn't agree with that. John MacArthur groups them into 9 categories. I'll give you some of his. He says some are about receiving the word, which would be like the parable of the sower. Some are about the cost of discipleship. Some of them are about justice and grace or neighborly love or justification by faith. So he's got 9 categories. Well, this individual I've mentioned a number of times this morning, Klein Snodgrass, he's got 8 categories, and they don't look like John MacArthur's 8 category, 9 categories. He kind of breaks them down into things like the present kingdom versus the future kingdom. He says some parables are about Israel, some are about prayer and God. My point in bringing this out is, it in some respects is almost a fruitless task to try to group them by theme, because not everybody's going to agree on theme, but the reality of it is, if you look at the parables, you do sort of see that there are some topics that are covered more than others. For instance, you have a lot that seem to address the kingdom. You've got some that seem to address being ready. And so we could, Dustin and I could come up with our own categories if we wanted to, but the problem with doing that is sometimes a psalm will fit into more than one of those categories. You might look at something like the parable of the sower, which John MacArthur says it's about receiving the word, and that is definitely part of that parable. But then somebody else will say, well, no, that's not about receiving the word, it's about the kingdom of God. Well, yes. So it kind of could fit into more than one category. So we're not necessarily going to try to identify that for you, but there are times you might hear us say, hey, this parable is kind of about the kingdom. So, again, it's a bit of a fruitless endeavor to try to nail down exactly how many categories there are, but I would argue that you could take a group of categories. You know, there are certain psalms or certain parables. He laughs at me because I kept saying psalms when I was in our meeting, or proverbs, yeah. So, but which does fit, since a proverb fits into the parables. You can sort of look at parables, and Jesus does this himself. He'll be talking about the kingdom, for instance, and he'll list three parables. So, you know, it's a little bit difficult. It's like the phrase nailing jello to the wall sometimes. Okay. Now, another way that parables sometimes are grouped, instead of talking about their topic that they address, people will group them according to their form or their function, meaning what's the structure of the parable? Or what is the purpose of the parable? And there's some truth to this. For instance, there are certain parables that we could refer to as similitudes or similes, extended similes. And what that means is that they compare one thing to another. For instance, Matthew chapter 13, verse 47, it says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet cast into the sea, gathering fish of every kind." Well, that would be called a similitude. It's just comparing two things. It's an extended simile. Okay? There's something very similar to that people refer to as an interrogative parable. That's the same thing, but asked in the form of a question. Jesus sometimes will do something like did in Matthew 11. "But to what shall I compare this generation?" And then he says, it's like children sitting in the marketplace who call out other children. So there's a number of parables that Jesus does that way. They're interrogative. He asks a question. It makes the person think about what would I answer or what would I do with this. And so there are some, if you were to group them, that are all about simply comparing one thing to another. There's also what are referred to as narrative parables, which are the stories, and they are simple or complex. Okay, so there's a certain set of parables that do have characters and plots, and they're a story. Again, sometimes very simple, sometimes very complex. You've got the Good Samaritan, the rich man and Lazarus. You've got the Pharisee and the tax collector that go in to pray. Those are all stories with characters. The purpose behind them is generally to provide a person to imitate. We're supposed to be like one of those people and not like the other. So we're supposed to be like the Good Samaritan and not the priest and the Levite that walked by the poor man. And so there's a purpose, but there's also a form to it. It's a story form, and it has the purpose of telling us who to be like. They also have what are called judicial parables. They form a parable that's really designed to cause somebody to examine themselves and to, in some respects, self-condemn. Let me give you an example of that. Anybody remember the prophet Nathan and what he did with David when David sinned against Bathsheba? Remember the story, the parable that he told him about the man who had this little lamb, you know, and it was designed to cause David to go, "He's a wicked man!" And then Nathan goes, "Yeah, we're talking about you, David." And all of a sudden, David's eyes light up because he realizes, "I'm just like the man that stole that little ewe lamb." And so you've got these judicial parables that Jesus uses to point a finger, if you will, to judge, to cause somebody to reflect, put themselves in the place, and to self-condemn themselves, hopefully to lead them to repentance. And then lastly, we have a group of these parables that are referred to as how much more parables. And this is when Jesus would ask questions like, how much more, and then he would lead into the parable, and those are typically designed to contrast God's character with man's character. Turn to Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11. I'll give you an example of one of those. Luke chapter 11. Jump down to verse 11. Now suppose one of you fathers is asked by his son for a fish. He will not give him a snake instead of a fish, will he? Or if he's asked for an egg, he will not give him a scorpion, will he? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit to those who ask of him? That's referred to as a how much more parable, and Jesus has a number of those. It's again, it's designed to contrast man's will, mind, actions, character with that of God's. And it's designed to magnify and lift up God. So we have these different ways that we can group or categorize, and we can do it sometimes by topic, we can do it by form or function. And you might hear us reference some of that as Dustin and I go through the parables. But we do need to keep in mind, especially when it comes to like form and function, because parables have a purpose. You're going to see that next week. We're going to look next week at the parable of salt, you are the salt of the earth, and the parable of light, you are the light of the world. And one of those can oftentimes be misunderstood because they don't understand the context, but they also don't understand the purpose, why Jesus used them specifically in that context. And so we'll look at that next week. So, the last thing I want to do when it comes to sort of helping us understand what a parable is, I want to just briefly run down some of these characteristics. What do parables look like? What are some of the characteristics? I've got about eight of them here. You don't have to remember these. You don't have to write them down. But just, they give us an idea. First and foremost, they're usually very brief. They're very terse. They're to the point. They generally use as few words as necessary. If you can say it in three words, Jesus will say it in three. And so they're usually very short, very terse. You are the salt of the earth. It's about as short as it gets. They're generally also very simple, generally focusing on a single topic, a single point. If there's characters involved, there's usually no more than just one or two characters. The other characters are all minor. And so they're just very simple. Even the stories are very simple. Single plot, single meaning. Oftentimes what you find is that people will read, 18 different meanings into a parable. And the problem with that is, scripturally speaking, parables generally only have one point. And it's the point Jesus intended. And so they're very simple, very not very much complexity to them. They can get complex, but still, even that wouldn't be super, super complex. It's not like watching a two-hour movie, They're always fictional, but they're examples taken from real life. And so the story of the rich man and Lazarus, he's not really talking about Lazarus. He's not really talking about a real rich man. He's giving an example. Doesn't mean they're not true, but it's just the elements are fictitious. They're trying to illustrate a true point. And so they're fictional. They're also usually very engaging. The whole point of using a parable, who doesn't like a good story? Who doesn't like a good example, right? When we preach and we teach, we often try to use examples, illustrations. Why? It engages people. In fact, illustrations are one of those things where they can be great because they can draw you in, but if your whole entire sermon is just one illustration, you can walk out feeling like, yeah, great story, but I didn't learn anything, right? So, same thing with Jesus. He didn't just do parables all the time. There was meat and substance to his teaching, and he would use parables as a way to engage people. So parables are always engaging. They require the listener to pay attention. They draw the listener in. Like I said, some of the interrogative parables are made to make you ask yourself, how would I answer that? Or when he says, how much more would God do this? And you go, yeah, probably a lot more. So the parables are used to draw us in, to make us listen. They often contain elements of contrast and even reversal. If you think about it, sometimes the characters are switched. For instance, the tax collector who's considered righteous, but the Pharisee who's considered unrighteous. Remember when they go into the temple to pray and Jesus uses the example of the Pharisee and the tax collector? Well, the tax collector by society was the wicked man and the Pharisee was the righteous, but Jesus reverses those, switches them up. What about the Good Samaritan? Everybody hated the Samaritans. You're supposed to look up to the priest and the Levite, but they go by the man who was robbed, and the Levite and the priest are the bad guys in that parable. The Good Samaritan, who was the bad guy in culture and society, was the good guy in the parable. So parables often have this reversal, if you will. In most cases, the most important part of the parable is the end. It's like a punchline of a joke. It's where all of a sudden, and the eyes light up, and it seems to make sense. This one is probably the most critical part, the characteristics of a parable, is they are always told in a context. They're always told in a context. Meaning they're not just something Jesus threw out in the middle of nowhere. He's teaching, usually. And he gives that parable in light of that teaching, so you have to understand the teaching to understand the parable. And that's part of the problem a lot of times, is people don't understand the circumstances surrounding the parable. A good example, again, will be next week when we look at what it meant for us to be the salt of the earth. Many people don't even know the context that came from. It's the Sermon on the Mount. It's right after the Beatitudes. And those are critical to understand what he meant by being the salt of the earth. You can't just say, well, how was salt used back in those days, and pick one of those options and say, that's what Jesus meant. And so, one of the other characteristics of parables is they always have a surrounding context that has to be used to interpret them. And then lastly, they're theocentric, God-centered. And what I mean by that is they seek to change behavior by making disciples, by telling us about God and His kingdom. And that's where parables are always used to give us a spiritual truth or to illuminate a spiritual truth. They're trying to get us to be more like Jesus, more like God. So, again, a parable is as we're going to define it here and as we're going to look at it, is ultimately a figure of speech or a story that Jesus uses to illuminate a spiritual truth that he's teaching on, and he's going to use a comparison to real life events and culture and society of his day to try to do that. All right? And so we're going to see that over the next, I don't know, 15 weeks or so, where we look at these parables. And we're going to try to draw some of those things out. Now, the big question we always have to ask is, why did Jesus speak in parables? Was it just because it's fun to tell stories? There's actually something more important to that. There was a very specific reason why Jesus spoke in parables. When we look at his use of parables, we actually see two patterns develop. Okay? Two different patterns. The first pattern is in how often Jesus used parables. Now, it really becomes a lot more obvious when you read through the Gospels in what's called a Harmony of the Gospels. A Harmony of the Gospels is a book you can get where it'll take all four of the Gospels and put them together in their own columns so that as you're reading through Matthew, right next to it, you see where that might be addressed by Mark, Luke, or John. And so you can read all four Gospels sort of together at the same time. Okay? Now, they don't just stick things in. What they do is they put them alongside each other. And so you might be reading along and say, oh, only Matthew covers this, and Mark, Luke, and John are empty. And then all of a sudden, oh, all four of them talk about this, or all four of them address this. Well, when you read that, something kind of starts to stand out as you start to say, where are those parables? Okay? And what's really interesting about it is that as Jesus goes along in his ministry, his frequency, the number of times he uses parables, increases the longer his ministry goes on. In fact, 1/3 of Jesus' parables occur in the first year and a half of his ministry. The other 2/3 occur in the second half of his ministry. And so the frequency, the number of times and how often Jesus uses parables, increases as time goes by. And it drastically increases after the midpoint in his ministry. Anybody know what that midpoint was about? It's pretty much where the opposition Jesus faced by the people, the crowds, and the leaders hit its intensity, aside from when they crucified him. In other words, there was a pretty stark time where all of a sudden the crowd started to turn on him a little bit, and the religious leaders started to think about killing him. And his use of parables increased at that point. That's going to be key here in a minute. So, the first pattern we actually see is that he begins to increase the number of parables he uses as he teaches, as he goes along. So that's the first pattern that we see. And it's going to help us understand why he spoke in parables. The second pattern that we see is in the complexity of the parables that Jesus taught. The first parables that are recorded in the Gospels are found in Matthew 5 and 6. I'm going to deal with those the first 2 weeks. And what's interesting about those parables, they are extremely simple. They don't need any explanation for the most part to those that he spoke them to. To us, they will, because a different culture and a different time, we have to explain those. I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 5 with me. I want you to see something. Matthew chapter 5. If you look at verses 13 and 16. We'll cover these next week. I'm just going to read them today. But I want you just to look at these and see how simple these are. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. This is very simple. You're the salt of the earth. If you're no longer salty, you're no good. That's something that the Jews would have understood very easily. Jesus nowhere here explains it to them. They would have just understood it. He goes on, he says, you're the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your God, or God the Father who's in heaven. It's very simple. That's the way Jesus started out with parables. They were very simple. They weren't very complex. But again, as he moves through his ministry, as you go through chapters 6 through 12, the complexity of these parables gets more intense. In fact, it gets to the point where even the apostles start going, Jesus, can you explain that to us? Because they weren't so easy to understand. And so we end up with parables like the man who built his house on a rock, or the moneylender with two debtors. Okay? They start to get a little bit more complex, and you have to think about them a little more. Well, then from there, you get into Matthew chapter 13, where you get the parable of the sower, that Jesus actually now has to explain to the disciples. They go to him and they say, can you tell us what that means? Or the wheat and the tares. And so we see this pattern play out from the very simple parables that Jesus doesn't have to explain, everybody understands them, to where they get a little bit more complex, where maybe you got to stop and think about it, but you still kind of get it, to where they become quite complex, where it requires that Jesus has to explain them now. So we not only see the frequency increase, where he teaches more and more and more in parables, but where those parables become much more complex and much more difficult to understand. So we see both of those patterns reflected. In fact, I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 13 with me, because Matthew alludes to both of these. Matthew chapter 13, look down at verse 34 with me. We'll start at 33. It said, he spoke another parable to them. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in the three pecks of flour until it was all leavened. And all these things Jesus spoke to the crowds in parables, and he did not speak to them without a parable. This was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophets. I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things hidden since the foundation of the world. Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples came to him and said, explain to us the parable of the tares of the field. What we see here are both of those patterns. What I mean by this is, Matthew chapter 13 comes at the halfway point in Jesus' ministry. Jesus spoke to the crowds with parables, but also without parables. If you go back in the first 11 chapters of Matthew here, you see that Jesus often taught without parables, but yet Matthew says he did not speak to them without a parable. What he's talking about here is a change in Jesus' ministry. At the midpoint in Jesus' ministry, as it came to the crowds, he no longer really spoke to them without parables. That's when the opposition really ramped up. That's when the Pharisees really started seeking to kill him. But we also see, so in that respect, we see the increase in the number of parables, and he only spoke to them in parables, Matthew says, at that point on. But then we also see the complexity, because verse 36 says that he left the crowds and he went to the house, and his disciples said, can you explain the parable to us? So we see both the increase in frequency, because Matthew says at this point in Jesus' ministry, he only spoke to the crowds in parables. So that number of times he used parables had increased dramatically to where it was now all the time. But we also see the increase in complexity here, because the disciples have to start asking, what does that mean? And Jesus began to take those parables and explain them now to the disciples in more detail, helping them to understand exactly what they meant. So even Matthew points out this pattern of an increase in the number of times and how often Jesus used parables, but also the increase in the complexity of the parables. And all of that leads us to, why did Jesus speak in parables, and why did he do that? Why did he increase how often he spoke in parables as time went on, and why did he start to use parables that were much more complex and much more difficult to understand? Jesus himself tells us in Matthew chapter 13. So go ahead and turn there, Matthew chapter 13. I'm going to have you jump down into verses 10 through 17. I'm going to read it for us. And then we're going to walk through and do some explanation of it. But Matthew chapter 13. And his disciples said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" Jesus answered them, "To you it has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been granted. For whoever has, to him more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has shall be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because while seeing they do not see, and while hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. In their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled, which says, 'You will keep on hearing, but you will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but you will not perceive. For the heart of this people has become dull. With their ears, they scarcely hear, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they would see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and would return, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For truly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desire to see what you see and did not see it, or hear what you hear and did not hear it.'" So what does Jesus himself say about his reason for speaking in parables? You notice the first thing here that we see is that the disciples specifically point out to us that Jesus spoke to them, the crowds, in parables. He spoke to the crowds in parables. And so the disciples, it was explained to them in private. So they come to Jesus, and Jesus asks, "Well, why is that the case? Why do you speak to them in these parables that obviously we don't even understand? We need them explained to us." And Jesus' answer to them, direct and to the point, verse 11, "To you it has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been granted." So the simple answer, why did Jesus speak in parables when it came to the crowds and explained them privately to the disciples? He said, because it's been appointed for you disciples to know the mysteries of God's kingdom, but God has not appointed for them to know. So he spoke in parables. Luke also records this parable, and he records it in a slightly different way. He focuses on a different, slightly different nuance. Matthew here indicates that Jesus spoke in parables because the crowds had become hard of hearing. Look at verse 11 again. "But to them it has not been granted, for whoever has, to him more shall be given, and he will be given, or he will have an abundance, but whoever does not have, even what he has shall be taken away." If you look at the example Jesus gives them, "Therefore I speak to them in parables," meaning a lot had been given to them, but it was now being taken away. Remember, the Jewish people were given all these mysteries of God, given the law and God's work with them, and basically Jesus says, look at everything that was given to them, and God has chosen to take something away. What he was taking away was further revelation about God and his mysteries and knowing who God was and his redemptive plan. And the reason was, if you keep reading through that, "Therefore I speak to them in parables, because while seeing they do not see, and while hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand." Their hearts had become hard, their hearts had become dull. They no longer could hear, they no longer could see. They had been rejecting the truth for generations. That was the history of Israel. How often did God have to chastise Israel over and over and over because he would reveal himself and they would reject what he would reveal? He gave them the law and they would not obey it. And so Jesus says, because of that, I speak to them in parables now. I speak to them in a way that they can't understand anymore. And it's because their hearts are hard. They're not going to listen. They're not going to hear. They're not going to try to understand. Mark's account, instead of saying the word because, says that Jesus spoke to them so that in seeing they couldn't see. So what we have is this double nuance. Both of them are true. Jesus spoke in parables because their hearts were hard and they would not try to understand and see, but he also spoke in parables to prevent them from being able to see and understand. Now that may not strike us comfortably because we think, why would Jesus not want them to understand? It's a form of judgment. That's all. Elsewhere, Jesus says not to cast our pearls before swine. Why does he say that? In many respects, it can be a waste of time for those that absolutely refuse to listen and will constantly reject. And so at this particular time, Jesus speaking to them in parables was partly because they refused to listen anyway. And we see that in his ministry. That's why he began to speak more and more and more in parables as the ministry went on. They began to be more opposed to Jesus. Initially, the crowds loved him, but then as time went on, not quite so much. Even to the point where the religious leaders were constantly seeking to kill him. And so Jesus says, they become hard, so I speak in parables, partly because they won't listen anyway. Which means, if you really want to follow me, if you're really interested, then you'll have to listen a little more difficultly, and you'll have to come to me for explanation. It's much like if you explain something to your child, and they're just like, I don't really care. And they go on their way, and they don't understand what you just said. But if they're like, no, I really want to understand what Dad meant by that, and they'll come and they'll ask. Same thing. But Jesus also, as a form of judgment, essentially said, I'm not going to teach in a way that they understand. In fact, Romans chapter 1, if we read that, it says that God hands people over. There are times where people can become so hard that God allows that hardness to sort of settle in. Doesn't mean that he doesn't want them saved. Doesn't mean he still isn't interested in them. He is. In fact, Paul tells us in the book of Romans that God still loves Israel. A time will come where he will regather Israel. But for the time being, Jesus spoke in parables as a form of judgment. So it wasn't so much a statement of fact as it was a judgment against the crowds. Look back at verses 14 and 15 again. In their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, you will keep on hearing, there's a reference to Israel there, but you will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but you will not perceive. For the heart of this people Israel has become dull. With their ears they scarcely hear, and with their eyes closed. Otherwise they would see with their eyes, and they would hear with their hearts, and they would understand with their heart, and would return so that I could heal them. You see, the disciples, though, were different. Look at what he says in verse 16. But blessed are your eyes, because they see, and your ears, because they hear. So Jesus would speak in parables because of the hardness of the heart of the crowds. But those that chose to listen, those who chose to understand, those who wanted to know what Jesus meant, would be drawn to him, and Jesus would explain, like he did the disciples, those parables to them, so that they could understand. And so the simple reason that Jesus spoke in parables really had a twofold purpose. One was to conceal the truth from those whose hearts had become hard and refused to listen, but to reveal it to others who were willing to listen, who would respond. We see this contrast in Mark chapter 4, who also addresses this. Turn to Mark 4 with me. Mark chapter 4. Look at verses 9 through 13 of chapter 4. He had just told the parable of the sower, or the parable of the soils. And he says to him, verse 9, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. In other words, it's a call saying, you got ears? Try to understand. Don't let this just go in one ear and out the other. If you've got ears, really listen. Try to understand what I meant by this parable. As soon as he was alone, his followers, along with the 12, began asking him about the parables. So they're responding. I've got ears. I'm going to try to hear Jesus. I'm going to try to understand. So tell me about these parables. So Jesus says, to you it's been given the mystery of the kingdom of God, but to those who are outside, they get everything in parables. So that while seeing, they may see and not receive, or not perceive, and while hearing, they may hear and not understand, otherwise they might return and be forgiven. And he said to them, do you not understand this parable? How will you understand all the parables? In other words, he's asking the disciples, he's challenging them here, okay, you really got to pay attention, you really got to listen, you really got to understand, because that's what is required of a disciple. And so we see this first part, that he was concealing the truth from those that were outside. But then you look at verses 33 through 34 a little bit later. Verse 33, and with many such parables he was speaking the word to them so far as they were able to hear it, and he did not speak to them without a parable. That's the crowds, but he was explaining everything privately to his own disciples. So we see both parts of this. Why did Jesus speak in parables? He told us himself. God has appointed the disciples, the followers of Christ, to understand the mysteries of God. He didn't appoint the Jewish crowds that had become hard of heart. Now that doesn't mean that God is out there just preventing them from seeing and hearing, and they had become hard. And so essentially he said, okay, I'm going to speak to you in parables. It's up to you now. You're going to come to me to ask for explanation. You're going to seek me out to know what these things mean. That gives a good indication as to where their hearts are. And those who went, that's too hard. You know, we face that sometimes in our churches. When somebody walks into a church and they don't like hard teaching. They don't like something that challenges them. They want it spoon-fed to them. They want mostly illustrations or stories, and they're drawn to that. But the harder stuff, the stuff that convicts, the stuff that says, you need to be more like Jesus. You need to grow and mature in your relationship with Christ. Oh, but it hurts. I don't really, you know, I don't like that message, Pastor, because it convicts me. It's the same thing in Jesus' day. The last thing I want to look at here, just briefly, is some of the interpretive challenges, and we'll wrap it up with this. Some things that we have to keep in mind when it comes to parables, because parables are not always easy. They're a challenge to understand and to interpret. So one of the challenges is ignoring the surrounding context. I've already said that every parable has a context, and we have to understand that. So what you're going to find as we go through these parables is we're not just going to focus on the parable. We're going to focus on the teaching that Jesus gives before or after that, and we're going to interpret the parable in light of that. Okay? So context, that's one of the challenges. Oftentimes when you hear people teach on parables, they never mention the context. They only focus on the parable. Another challenge is ignoring the cultural divide. All these parables were real life examples taken from the first century, and sometimes we're tempted to try to understand them in light of our own culture, and we can't. For instance, you need to understand the marriage ceremonies and the patterns of marriages and that in order to understand the parable of the 10 virgins, because that's right out of their understanding of marriages. So we have to understand this, the cultural nature of this. And so we'll do some of that, because so oftentimes people will take a parable completely out of context. I'll give you a great example. It'll come from next week. I'm going to let the cat out of the bag a little bit. When Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth," and we immediately jump to, "Oh, we use salt to season. Therefore, we got to be out there and season the world." You know, it's not what Jesus was saying. We'll get to that next week. We have to understand the culture that it was in. Another one is making too much of the minor details. Augustine was a master at this. Augustine used to allegorize parables, which means every single detail of that parable had a spiritual meaning. An example might be the oil in the lamps of the virgins. Oh, that's the Holy Spirit. And so every single element of the... You know what? Parables typically, a lot of the details are minor details. They're just part of the story, and they don't have some deeper, hidden, theological, spiritual truth to that minor detail. And we run into danger when we do that. I once had a friend of mine who went to hear a sermon by a pastor when I was in seminary, where he was talking about something from the Old Testament, essentially. And who was it that tore up the lion and then Samson with, you know, all the honey and reaching in? And so he turned the whole sermon into, we are supposed to be like him and take honey everywhere we go. That was the meaning of that story. We're supposed to take honey everywhere we go. Meaning, be sweet everywhere you go. It's like, holy, it just allegorized like crazy, right? And so sometimes people will do that with these parables. They'll assign way too much meaning to these small, minor details, and that's not at all what's intended. Minor details sometimes are just minor details. Another one, using parables as the basis for doctrine. Parables should never be used as foundations for our doctrine or our theology. They're illustrating or illuminating the doctrine or the teaching that Jesus gives. But some people will build theology on parables. Dustin gave a great example as we were meeting the other night, the parable of the sower. I don't know if it was somebody who told him this, or he heard a sermon on this, or if he thought it at one point, no idea. Just kidding him a little bit. But so you have this parable of the sower, which talks about the four different kinds of soil. And in that parable of the sower, we'll let the cat out of the bag, only the last one is saved. Only the last person is saved. So, out of four people, three are not saved, one is saved. That's 25% get saved. And so, the example Dustin was giving was turning that into theology that, oh, that means that in evangelism, only 25%. In other words, evangelism is only 25% effective. You're developing a doctrine or a theology out of a parable. That's not what that's about. We are never to define, we are never to draw our theology out of parables. And there are plenty of examples that I could go into where people have done that. A whole entire belief is because of one parable. No. They illuminate what Jesus taught. The last, and this is the final piece, and then we'll head into just some singing time here. And this is one that Dustin also brought up. It was interesting that we both were thinking about this. It is common in some modern-day churches with modern-day pastors and teachers who do not like expository teaching or preaching, or what's called didactic teaching, which is kind of what we do here when we go through a book of the Bible. We go verse by verse. It's sort of lecture-oriented or discussion-oriented. And they've avoided that, and their sermons are all storytelling or illustrations. They do everything through illustrations and stories. And their argument is, Jesus, it says, only spoke to them in parables. So we should too. And so you people that teach expositorily, you're not doing it like Jesus. And they try to make a biblical argument for only teaching in illustrations and stories. And sometimes that's, you can go online and you can watch some of these folks, some very popular individuals, who it is. It's mostly stories and illustrations. That's the bulk of how they teach and what they teach. The problem is, Jesus only spoke in parables 35% of the time. And when he did speak in parables, it was always after or in the middle of teaching didactically, meaning where he was just teaching them principles, precept upon precept. That's the real example of Jesus. And so, when you go in and you listen to somebody who spends 75% of a sermon all in an illustration because he thinks that that's the way Jesus taught, that's not really the way Jesus taught. Jesus was particular about the parables. They were very strategic when he used them. But again, they always had that context, and they were always used only as part of illuminating or illustrating the broader teaching. So, to say we should just teach like Jesus and only teach in stories and illustrations is not biblical. All right. So, like I said, it would be a little academic today, kind of like you're in an English lit class or something like that. But all of these things will fit into how we're going to approach these parables over the next 15 weeks or so. So I'm excited about it. I'm hoping you guys are too. Dustin and I, and even Dave's going to do hopefully maybe one or two of them for us as well. And so hopefully it'll be a great study for all of us. All right.